Whether this is her first Mother's Day or her 40th, she deserves more. Shop tons of stunning on-trend jewelry for every budget at Diamonds Direct. Diamond fashion jewelry, beautiful birthstones, everyday pearls, starting at just $200. Commemorate the real loves of her life with a gorgeous pendant featuring the birthstone of the one who made her mom. This Mother's Day, Diamonds Direct is everything you need to say thank you. Diamonds Direct, your love, our passion. Online at DiamondsDirect.com.
Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama, a new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
The best conversations I have with my colleagues are the ones that happen when no one is looking, when we're not 100% sure yet what to write.
Hopefully, having conversations like this can help you figure out your own point of view. That's kind of our job as Washington Post opinions columnists. I'm Charles Lane, Deputy Opinion Editor.
And I'm Amanda Ripley, a contributing columnist. We're going to bring you into these conversations on a new podcast called Impromptu.
Follow Impromptu now, wherever you listen.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. Hello, the internet, and welcome to season 236, episode 3 of Der Daily Zeitgeist, a production of iHeartRadio. This is a podcast where we take a deep dive into America's shared consciousness. It's Wednesday, May 11th, 2022, which of course means that it is National School Nurse Day. Mm-hmm. It is also National Twilight Zone Day.
Yeah. Are
we talking about the ocean zone, or are we talking about the TV property?
Which I think we are talking about. You have entered the Twilight Zone, the TV show, which I don't know why it's on May 11th, because it premiered on October 1st in 1959. But hey,
as
whatever knows.
Yeah. Wait, are you a big Twilight Zone head?
Nope. That's just me reading the information about the holiday.
I mean, you can just fake it. You can just be like, yeah,
I know, but
yeah,
like,
yeah,
I don't. I feel like even in my
I
mind.
I celebrate
like,
October 1st.
In the back of my mind, I'm not like, as a kid, I was like, it's in black and white. Couldn't watch it. And then as I got older, they're like, no, the writing's really good. And then I watched it. And I'm like, okay, you had a point.
Right.
So that's my relationship with Twilight Zone. But I'm not going to front like I'm a super fan.
I never watched it growing up. I watched Alfred Hitchcock Presents.
Oh,
you remember
yeah.
that? That was also in black and white.
What do you
I don't know.
Do?
But I remember it like being primetime viewing. Or something.
Is that the one where he would walk into his like
yeah,
silhouette his, like on the side?
Yeah. Unflattering side silhouette.
Yeah, yeah.
I yeah. That. Well, anyways, my name is Jack O'Brien, aka my anaconda don't want none unless you're pro abortion. That is courtesy of Ruthless Fudge at Ruthless Fudge on Twitter. And I'm thrilled to be joined as always by my co-host, Mr. Miles Gray.
It's Miles Gray, aka the Blazing Visual Artist, your boy Kusama, straight twisting backwards on Lankerson. They call me Hideo Noho. Get out my way. I'm here. Mm. Thank you so much.
I like
having
that you
Jack.
Sung the kind of intro to the
yeah,
standard
I just,
AK.
I just wanted nice. To feel I've had a song in my heart, you know? Mm.
Well, Miles, we are thrilled to be joined in our third and fourth seats
uh-oh.
By a former Marvel Entertainment lawyer, current Big Law media attorney, and an entertainment enthusiast who hosts the podcast Better Call Paul. It's Mesh Lakhani and Paul Sarker. What's up?
Hello, hello.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Doing
hey,
good.
Guys. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for coming
awesome
on.
Awesome to be here.
Oh, yeah. We're taking tips on those intros. That's quite the intro you guys have there.
You got any AKAs? You got any sing-song wordplay on your names?
Not off the top.
Yeah.
Can't put me on the spot like that.
AKA John Mesh, like John Tesh.
Let's see. That's good. That was what I was going to say.
Yeah. Well, some people use AKA Mesh like the shorts.
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go.
Mesh merino.
Mesh like the shorts.
Yeah, no, but mesh merino like the Jamaicans wear. Mm-hmm. That mesh tank top. Yeah, I like that also.
I think that's Kid Marrow's AKA.
Or is that? No, that's Jesus.
That's Jesus. My bad.
He's the mesh merino with the cold misdemeanor or cool demeanor. And well, I forget, it's been so long since the art has come out. But anyway, that's another thing.
Ooh,
it's another
subtle
thing.
Subtle shade. We're just not fans. Shade. Just we miss
fans.
You.
Just fans.
Where are you guys coming to us from?
NYC.
Okay.
NYC.
Heard of it?
Right now. Yeah.
Yes, sir. The big old apple, I think, is called. Nice.
Yeah. The big old apple.
Yeah.
That big old apple.
Never sleeps?
Well, actually, you know, it does sleep. I was out last night with friends, and we couldn't find anywhere to go to. It was completely dead, so it sleeps on Mondays.
There you go.
Not but in a good way.
When I worked for Diane Sawyer, I had to stake out the clubs in the meatpacking district to interview young men about whether they were using Viagra as a party drug. And and they were like, the clubs and don't they get out until like 4. And it got pretty sleepy there for a little while. And I was cold. But people were using Viagra as a party drug.
Wait, so Jack, were you just outside the club and like, hey, man, can I talk to you really quick? And they're like, yeah, what's up?
I mean,
up?
I had a
and they're like, hey,
crew.
Do you use Viagra to party?
What was the answer you were getting? They're like, no, it's called something else.
Mostly it was, I would. Do you have some? And you're like, no, yeah. This isn't that kind of.
You selling?
Yeah.
No, I'm here for with ABC News. What? Nah, bro. Leave me alone.
Yeah. I don't know what the conceivable, like what conceivable story they were after there. But
it sounds like a thing older people would think of. It's like, man, imagine if it's doing this to me at 55. Yeah. What are the young guys doing if they're taking it? Are they just blasting off to another planet? Like, I mean, like, Jack, go down there. Give me 3,000 words on this.
Mike Nichols was like, hey, you know what, Diane? This stuff could work for a lot of people. Yep. I do remember that, like, one of the young people who, like, started with me, like, well, I was 25 when I started there, and, you know, she was around the same age, and she had all these scoops on like what the kids were up to that I'm pretty sure she was making up. And like one of the, I think the Viagra thing might have been one of them. Another was called toothing, which was where like you use Bluetooth to just like hit people up and randomly proposition the people around you to see if they want to have sex. And
oh my, that's such.
That actually sounds like something that did exist.
It does. I think there was an app that worked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
your
that's why we spent a year looking into it and never found anything.
People do that with the AirPods now. They'll try to connect to people's AirPods and play some stuff on it and see if they can get some type of interaction. I don't know.
Yeah.
God, I can't think of an easier way for me to be like, oh, cool. What? You just completely invaded my ear space? Oh, you want to have a cool. Nice to meet you, person who has no boundaries.
Well, Mesh and Paul, we are going to get to know you guys a little bit better in a moment. First, we're going to tell our listeners a couple of the things that we're talking about. We're going to talk entertainment industry, since that is you guys' specialty, specifically streaming fatigue. Is it real? Where do we go from here? And then we are going to talk about Doctor Strange in the Multitude of Madness, Mesh, I think you called it a couple times on your most recent episode.
I actually did it right before I was talking to Paul earlier and I did it again. So I'm now just convinced this is the name.
Hey, man. It's a mouthful, that title. Yeah.
Look, in another multiverse, there is a movie called Multitude of Madness.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's there's many madnesses. I've specifically come out as anti this movie because the title is scary to me. But it does seem popular, and the right is trying to claim it. So we'll talk about the culture wars around that and try not to fall asleep while doing that. All of that, plenty more. But first, Mesh and Paul, we do like to ask our guests, what is something from your search history that's revealing about who you are?
So I'm kind of a nerd. I like to research a lot about like space and sort of like interplanetary societies and, you know, what's going to happen if Earth like runs out of water or fresh water or, you know, an asteroid comes too close or whatever. So I search a lot about that. From Philly, I'm a big Eagles fan, so I've been searching a lot about our draft picks and like what they did in college and how they're going to translate to the pros. And I got a lot of business travel lined up. So I'm always kind of looking for flights and hotels and stuff.
Nice.
So in your interplanetary searches, do you have these thoughts? And then you're like, okay, I need to see who's thinking about this also, or who's seemingly coming to an answer about like a question. That's something I think of living in California with the drought and, you know, desertification of the West seeming to be in full effect here. What kind of things have you learned in your search for these answers?
Well, you know, so I don't want to say I'm like fatalistic about it, but I think there's a lot of optimism and hope out there that people think, you know, it's just things are going to progress sort of like logarithmically. You know, we can get some critical mass of people to travel really quickly to, you know, moons in the solar system and sort of set up shop there. And then, mm-hmm. you know, kind of, so
perhaps fly business.
Yeah. I think, sky is falling, but yeah, you know, there's optimism out there and it's so vast, right? Like that's the other thing. We can't really comprehend how far things are away from us and how long it would take to get there, but it doesn't mean it's hopeless.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. Space at like the solar system is the size of Ohio in most depictions of space. It's like, and then a little bit out further, you've got the asteroid belt, and the asteroid belt looks like a lazy river full of, you know, asteroids, like, whereas reality, everything's so far apart. The asteroids themselves are far, very far apart. And you, from one planet, the other planets look like just little specks in the sky. They don't look like, I don't know. I feel like when I picture outer space in a movie, it's just like a classroom model, you know?
Yeah.
Right.
The maps are off.
Your maps are all fucked up, Hollywood.
But to your point, there are a lot of oceans, even on like moons in our solar system, that have more water than Earth. And I think only like 3% of water on Earth is considered fresh water. So, you know, may not be hopeless if we can find a way to sort of treat ocean water and drink it or something.
Yeah.
Has that not been the case? I thought that they've not been able to do that. I thought they were.
I think they do.
It takes aircraft massive carriers. Amounts of energy. Yeah.
Maybe cruise ships.
I see.
Well, aircraft carriers have nuclear reactors on them that power them, and they're able to like do tons and like create tons and tons of desalinization on a daily basis.
I think the hard part that people say is like if you don't live near the coast, then getting the access to that desalinized water is like the next sort of problem that would have to be solved. Is like, sure, that can help things along the coast, but how, like, where's the infrastructure to move massive amounts of water
that
constantly?
Yeah. How about you, Mesh? What is something from your search history?
Helping my sister find dinner for 10 people in New York City at 8 p.m. on a Wednesday, which is impossible. And you need a private dining room. And I got some, like, I actually went, I was like helping her and I couldn't find anything that was like, you know, you don't want to throw, I don't want to throw her like a Buco de Beppo in Times Square.
Right.
And so I'm trying to find her something. I'm like, look, I found this private room. Like, hopefully it will be legit. And then we did the search and then I emailed them and they came back. So it's a $2,500 minimum for 10 people plus $500 renting the room. Plus that doesn't include tax and gratuity.
Oh my God.
And by the way, we can only fit 10 people in the private dining room. And I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah.
That's New York for you. So
that is New York.
Yeah. What do you do when you want to have like a big birthday kind of thing and eat with a bunch of people in New York? Like, is it just like, what is the place that you're sort of reflexively would think? Like,
you go you go to like a bar, you go to a bar, dive bar, or you go to like Dos Caminos.
There's a Chuck E. Cheese in Brooklyn.
There's a Chuck E. Cheese. You're basically going for like the C list of anything you wanted. So you basically get rid of all your friends or like mix them across like part of the week. Like a 10-person dinner, you got to plan like in advance, especially now in New York. Reservations are just taking over our lives. You can't just walk in anymore. I don't know if LA has the same problem.
No, I mean, it depends, but I think New York has such a, like, people, it's such a destination, and on top of it, there's so, like, so many good restaurants popping up all the time that, like, I remember one of the times I was visiting in the fall, someone's like, oh, you got to try this restaurant, but you got to log on to like the reservation site at midnight.
Yeah.
And I'm not joking. I felt like a bunch of bots took up all the reservations. And I was like, how the fuck did that happen? Like, I'm good at buying shit like when it drops, like just from being a, like, you know, reformed hype beast. So I was like, oh, it's nothing to get a reservation. Cut to like literally within seconds, everything was vaporized. And like, I don't know what. Okay, I guess
you walk in at 5 o'clock when it opens on a Monday and you pray.
Right. I guess I'll go to Esa Bagel again.
What's something you guys think is overrated?
I think sparkling water is overrated.
Okay.
I'm a tap person.
Oh,
I guess I get that some people don't like tap or can't drink like still water, but I don't personally understand it.
Do you disagree on that then, Paul?
Okay, well, didn't mean to cause some tension here. Do you like sparkling at all? Or you're just, you said, no, I don't need that. I'm fine.
Same guess.
Sparkling? No, I mean, so I don't mind fizz, like soda or like Red Bull, but I don't get the sparkling water thing. I think it's, I think it's a little hoity-toity.
Oh wow, man. Okay.
This guy's like digging away.
Your inner Philly.
We did not coordinate. That's the thing. Maybe we should have. I didn't realize.
I didn't realize you hated sparkling water so much, Paul.
This episode's like crossfire. We're trying to turn this into crossfire where you guys are just going at each other.
All right. Yeah. Sparkling water sucks. Mesh, go. You're a butter.
I have a Soda Stream in my house. So.
Yeah, I just got one.
They're great.
I feel you on this, Paul. Like when I'm thirsty, I'm not thinking, oh, I need a sparkling water. I'm like, I need water so I can down a bunch of like fluid before without my chest bursting because of like the intensity at which I drink things when I'm thirsty. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Like when you start going, you take
a gulp of that and then your chest feels like it's going to
like fucking
alien baby is about to pop out. Yeah.
So yeah. I don't like it for that, but like I like it to, you know, I'll mix drinks with sparkling water and things like that. It's nice to have like to sip on, but like for pure hydration, there's no fucking way I could be like, I need a Pellegrino.
Yeah. See someone with sparkling water in the gym. That wouldn't make sense. Right.
Oh, what?
So, yeah, see, well,
I'd have something to say, or I wouldn't say something, but I would be judgmental in my mind.
I have something to say under my breath after I left.
I went into an infrared sauna the other day and, you know, you get bottles of water and you go into it and they were only stocked with sparkling water. I think someone made a mistake. So I'm in the sauna and I'm like chugging it and don't realize it's sparkling water and they didn't have regular water. In that case, sparkling water does not work when you're in 175 degree heat.
No. And then I'm sure the burps are like criminal in an environment that hot.
Yeah.
What's something that you think is underrated, Paul?
Okay. I used to live in LA. I think In-N-Out animal style fries are underrated. I think they're the best fry. And I've heard a lot of hate about In-N-Out fries. And I think if you get them well done animal style, you can't go wrong.
You know what's so funny? I was with you and then you lost me because I'm the most despicable kind of In-N-Out fry fan. I like them lightly fried. I like mushy sticks on my animal fries. It's like a loaded baked potato when you do it like that.
Yeah.
That's in my mind what's happening.
Yeah, then you definitely need the fork.
Oh, yeah. You got to have the fork.
Yeah.
So that's like more, Miles, what you order is more like shepherd's pie, basically.
Something. It's not
mashed potatoes stuck to the bottom of a big with chunk of cheese and
melted American cheese and whatever their fried, you know, Thousand Island is basically.
Yeah.
Are you missing it out there in New York or
I miss it a lot. Okay. Whenever I'm in LA, I go like 2 days a week because I really like it that much. And I haven't been there since end of February. So I'm there's nothing like it out here.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
The Shake Shack's nothing like it. I don't understand.
The fries are different.
The Shake Shack is not. Yeah.
No. The eye roll from Paul. I just had to narrate it.
Oh, man.
When this man came through with the. I love Shake Shack. Wow. I feel In-N-Out is a little bit overrated, specifically because of the fries.
This really is crossfire.
Up to, you know, they're just not my favorite kind of fries. But
no, I hear you on the. I hear you on the kind of like the mushiness of it. That's why I get them well done. And then I think they're really good.
Yeah, but the burgers are kind of the same though.
Miles and I order together and he always makes me order the medium rare, he says. Can I get those fries medium?
The fries? Rare? No, get them well. Get
blue,
them well.
Blue. No. Get them blue. No, I say blue.
Yeah.
I want those fries blue, baby. Like fucking
I want
Nipsey
the natural
Hussle.
Cultures from the earth that the potato grew in still alive.
Right.
I mean, they're really fresh. You watch them like slice the potato right in front of you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, like speaking of New York culture, cuisine culture, like my roommate and I once like drove, I think an hour and a half to go to like a Chick-fil-A on the Jersey Turnpike because like there was no Chick-fil-A at the time. Like you come to like really be into weird things that are available elsewhere, like the IKEA. At the time, there wasn't an IKEA on Manhattan, and people would like.
There isn't anymore. They closed that.
Yeah,
it's still, I was trying Brooklyn, to go, right? And they closed it in January. Yeah, there's one in Brooklyn,
Red Hook, but... I think in Red Hook or something like that.
Yeah, there's like randomly a Kmart hidden in the middle.
I think they closed that too.
Herald
I think
Square.
That Kmart.
Yeah, but like that, I would go in there and Astor just be place. Like, oh, yeah. I'm in Dayton, Ohio again. This is nice.
Mesh, what about you? What's something that's underrated?
Underrated, I would say that I'm quite disappointed. I don't know if you guys have seen it, but Station 11, the show on HBO Max that was based off the graphic novel, just didn't really get the attention I thought. I thought that was a fantastic show. It was one of my favorite of the year. So
yeah, I thought it was very effective to the point that it was unsettling for me at the time.
Yeah,
that like I was like, we're kind of like living a version of this right now, and y'all are doing it so well. Like it really, I think, encapsulated like just, you know, from that first episode, like that transition from like order to chaos, and then like what do
so
we do
good.
Next. So in that sense, I think it was absolutely great. For me, I think I say it was so good, it unsettled me to the point that I had to like put a lot of space in between episodes.
But I try to get people to watch it. When I would tell them the premise, they're like, why the hell would I watch that? Like, that's our life that we're living right now. Right. That's not really our life that we're living right now. But it could be if you don't watch it, you would be prepared for life like that. If you watch
and then everyone's like, you got to get like, he's like, once you get free friends, are like when you get deeper, it has more of a story rather than you just living in the panic of the earth is crumbling around us and we need to hide in our house forever.
Yeah. Get to episode 8 of 10 and then you're right there.
Yeah. I feel like it came, wow, it came out around,
board, man. I got to start watching it.
It's a good one.
Yeah, it's really good. It came out around the same time as Yellow Jackets, which I feel like they split voters a little bit.
Right.
Like it was kind of a they were both like sort of post-apocalyptic wilderness-y type things. It is. I was on Yellow Jackets first, and then I was like, fine. It took me a while to get around to it because I was like, I don't have time to just watch the same show twice in a row. But Station 11's really good.
It's funny you say that because I haven't seen Yellow Jackets as much as people have been like watch Yellow Jackets, and I was like, I can't do it. I only had the mental capacity for one of them.
You watched the better one already, so like Yellow Jackets is fun, but
you like Station 11 more than Yellow Jackets?
I did, yeah.
Oh wow! I mean, not that I got through Yellow Jackets, but I remember how enthusiastic you were about Yellow Jackets. But I know in your back pocket, you're like, but Station 11, you still have that picture of Station 11 you unfold and look at. Like, it's still you. It's still you.
Yeah.
Yeah, there is more buzz about Yellow Jackets. People weren't talking about Station 11. Like, you have seen Station 11? It'd be like me, and then they'd all be talking about Yellow Jackets. So you're just at the wrong place.
Yeah, because I think having like Christina Ricci and like Juliette Lewis back and stuff, people like something awoke in people. Like, yes, the 90s and aughts.
That's true.
Yeah. I still have like quotes from Station 11 like pop in my head. It added that old Tribe song to my playlist, which it's just a really like all around great show. I highly recommend it. It's a good underrated, man. All right, let's take a quick break. We'll be right back.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan. And if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island. And secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Me. Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this. I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter. That's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered. Could just be
in
me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
And we're back. And I mean, we were just kind of talking about this streaming fatigue.
Enough time? Too many shows?
Too many shows? There are currently 3 shows on that I would have like wished for in the past. Like I would have, like I would, you know, objectively, We Run This City should be something that is like appointment viewing for me, and like I should have a text chain going with like all my friends who you know, I watched The Wire with, and I haven't watched. It's like out. The reviews are great. It's by the people who made The Wire. It's about Baltimore City police and corruption updated for the realities of our modern world and what we've found out about police just in general. And I'm just like, I don't know. It's
right.
You know,
I think increasingly since the simplicity of just it being Netflix to then every other platform coming online, like with every single one, like I feel like my attention is split and fractured. And on a certain level, it feels like everything's blending together. Like there's no such thing as TV or film in a way. Like, I think that's the sensation it's had on me. Like I used to be very, like as a kid, it was like you watch HBO has fucking movies and then you watch TV shows here. But now with everything coming online with streaming, like I don't know. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing that I'm sort of viewing everything through this singular lens. But yeah, I think the reason why we even bring up the fatigue and stuff is obviously like when Netflix lost a bunch of those subscribers, everyone's like, what the fuck's going on? And so many, like the streaming world felt like it was very, some were high-fiving, others were panicked.
Yeah, Wall Street shit themselves when they lost subscribers for the first time. And I think people, there were a lot of think pieces about streaming fatigue, but it's definitely something, I don't know, it seems like when the pandemic hit, there was too little, and then they overcompensated, and now there's too much. And I don't know, like, will there be too little again, and then we'll all catch up on all the Stations 11 that we missed and all the great content that we missed? But you guys talk about the business of entertainment. What are your thoughts on this kind of overall story?
Well, I mean, I think from a business perspective, this is sort of how things ebb and flow. I mean, you know, rewind, you know, to what you guys were talking about 10 years ago when it was basically just Netflix and, you know, people were watching a lot of linear television and appointment viewing or whatever, you know, one show a week and then, you know, tune in at 8 o'clock and watch, you know, next week. And Netflix was just crushing everybody because they had a brand new business model. There were no ads. You could binge things. And that instantly, you know, shifts every studio head's, every content executive's focus to, all right, now how do we win at their game? How do we compete in that arena? And there's a couple year lag when you sort of build out your infrastructure, you get your talent team, you raise the capital, you start developing shows and getting intellectual property to make a competitive offering. And then it usually overcorrects, right? Because it's not like you just find the ideal amount of content. It's like everyone jumps in and tries to start competing. And then at a certain point, the pendulum swings back the other way. And then you have content overload. And then, you know, as we saw with CNN Plus, and, you know, there's other streaming services that are not going to be here, you know, a year from now or 2 years from now, because the money isn't there. Like, people can't have 10 or 15 streaming services. And so it's going to go back into some form of consolidation. At least that's what I think. But I think this is just the process. Like, everyone sees the dollars and thinks, I want to, you know, get into this space. And then they commit a certain amount of money. They probably overspend, and they're chasing something and hoping that they can get a piece of it.
Yeah, I mean, you can also compare it to, like, not just streaming in the sense of content like movies and TV. Pandemic, we have 2 years growth, and just generally a lot of places ran up like 5x more than it would run up in a 2 year span. It was like the equivalent of like 5, 6, 7 years of growth in like a 24-month span. Obviously, like the Zooms of the world, the Pelotons of the world, we've seen all of those come down. Everything's correcting itself. So I think it's all just coming down to a point of, look, this was a weird time. People were doing more stuff. We're going back to almost regular life. I mean, look at gym memberships. There was a point in time when nobody wants to go to the gym. We have Peloton. Now gym memberships are back up again. People are like leaving their Peloton subscriptions like, fuck it, I want to go to a gym again. And so I think, you know, to Paul's point, you're just seeing a general correction of these things.
And what's like, I mean, when I would always look at just the amount of content coming out, because on some level, like, it's somewhat sustainable based on their subscriber growth and things like that. But on another level, like, I think the fatigue part, do you think that's anything that networks consider, right? Because on some level, you see, like with Netflix, they have so many shows they'll put out. A couple are the ones that like really move the needle. And then like you see like constantly them, like a wave of cancellations. I'm always looking at that. I'm like, is that good business for them? Because we've heard about, like, you know, the ups and downs of, you know, the way they spend money. And I'm always curious. I'm like, what is the long term goal here? Because I'm looking at purely as a consumer with a little bit of like industry know how. But I'm always like thinking, like, how do you keep doing this? Like, spending tons of money, then being like, okay, that was a bad investment. But then this thing we spent a little bit of money ended up taking off.
Yeah, like, how lucrative is it when a show like Squid Game or the first season of Stranger Things or like shit like that, like, just takes over the zeitgeist? Like, is that enough? Like, does that pay itself back? And like, they're like, all right, that covers all those other shows that we made that nobody watched.
It's a great question. I mean, I think I think it comes down to stickiness, right? Because if you are subscribing to a service just for a show and then you cancel when it's over and you wait till the next season comes out to rejoin, then I don't know that it's as lucrative. If you're someone that's sort of like, you know, I just want to turn on Netflix. They've had a show that I really liked a couple years ago. I'm not going to cancel it. And I'll just turn it on and browse when I want to watch something. Then that's great. Like if a show brings a lasting customer, then it's awesome, especially if it brings a ton of them. But I think one of the things that you see in film now is the proliferation of franchises, right? And so it's like Fast and the Furious 10 and Thor 4 and Thor 5. And that's because you're basically like you're not starting over from scratch. Like you've invested all this time building a fan base, telling about, you know, creating characters, making them familiar. You have merch out there. And so you don't want to lose that investment. So you keep going with the franchise. And I don't think, at least to this point, like Netflix is quick to cut the bait on things and sort of go in a different direction. I guess they have a lot of analytics that say justify it from their perspective. But I think you're right. Like they haven't, I mean, yes, there's Stranger Things and maybe who knows what the second season of Squid Game is going to be like. But they are sort of like, they put everything behind their brand. So it was all about Netflix, right? That was the primary thing they were selling. And the shows were supposed to be kind of fungible. And it in a more competitive environment, I don't know if that strategy is going to, you know, prove to be ultimately successful.
And fungible, a word that I know the meaning of, but maybe our listeners don't. So why don't you explain what that is?
So it's fungible, meaning like interchangeable. Right.
Exactly.
So,
right.
Yeah.
Totally. That's what I'm. Yeah. Totally.
Yeah.
So I also wonder if this is a compounding problem, right? Because now, even if they like bring it back to like, okay, we're making a manageable amount of content, like it feels like there's still like more places to like see the content. There's, like, Squid Game was not the result of them having like a great farm system where like the Netflix writers hit this one out of the park. They like found this show, like, you know, didn't pay that much for it. The creatives involved seemed like kind of pissy. Like once the media started paying attention, they were like, they didn't pay a shit. Like it was fine.
And it took
like,
forever to make, right?
Yeah.
Isn't that the case? Yeah. It took a long time.
So I don't know. And now they're, The other like kind of concern I would have with Netflix is that they do seem to be like saying we are, but I think this is a direct quote actually. Reed Hastings was like trying to reassure everyone that Netflix had been through tough times before and that it would solve its problems. He said the company was now super focused on getting back into our investors' good graces. And I feel like that's maybe not the, I don't know, like this was around the time that they started talking about it, introducing a advertising model and like cutting password sharing, and I don't know if that's gonna do it.
It's like, I think just the unfortunate thing about public markets though is that they probably have a 10-year plan of the type of content they're going to be making. You know, shows that can be made really quickly, like Selling Sunset, that a lot of people watch, to an Ozarks that takes a long time to make and that just concluded. At the same time, they have to please investors on a quarterly basis, and investors are not happy, especially in a market like this. I think he just has to say things that, where, look, like, obviously at the end of the day, we're just going to continuously make great content. It's very competitive right now. As the market corrects, we'll see what happens, but it is generally like pretty competitive. But I would say that Netflix then comes back in and you got boom, 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 show after show after show. And I think just like with all the networks, that you find a little bit of the fatigue is really more, it seems like on their side, where it's like there's a bit where, okay, my favorite show is not running. Like HBO Max doesn't have Euphoria just finished, and, you know, some of the other shows just finished. And now we're kind of waiting for, you know, what's the next big show to pop up on there. And in the meantime, you watch something on another network and another network and another network.
I also feel like their main strength is supposed to be all the data they have on us and like their ability to like dig into that to figure out like what people want, and then, you know, create, like flood the zone with that. And like now there's a meme about like doom scrolling Netflix and just, you know, not being able to find the thing that you want or anything that's interesting to you. And I saw a specific like complaint from somebody who's like, I'm a horror fan. And the things that they recommend to me are always The Conjuring and like, you know, the most popular horror movies. And like that, I know that that like wasn't initially what they were supposed to have, like such a, they're supposed to be able to like flex their algorithm and like,
yeah,
he was like, Netflix has deep cut horror movies like the old ways, but those don't ever get recommended to me. I'm just wondering if they could use some human curation, like a, maybe we've hit the like fail point of the Turing test of Netflix's like algorithmically generated like content suggestion model. And like they, why wouldn't you, I know they just like fired all of their editors who they had hired, but like, why wouldn't you try to build up, you know, the way that like Peloton instructors had like a following and like people, you know, there were memes about them and they were like, oh, this is the one that I love. And, you know, you should have like these people curating channels on Netflix and, you know, like give some humanity to it rather than just a wall of fucking content. Good idea, right? And they should hire me to do it.
I like the mix of algorithm and curated. I like your idea.
I think it's a great idea. I think you maybe should have not given it to them for free.
Yeah, you know, that's what we do. We just give out brilliant shit for free.
You should hear some of the stuff. Oh, well, man, we came up with a old distressed malls that we take over and we make them like 90s retro experiences. We've got a lot of business ideas, Paul, like, you know, we give out for free. But yeah, that was one of the better ones.
The curated thing I think works is like I'm always looking for, like, there's a handful of people that like, oh, you're like, hey, someone recommended me, you know, a show. I trust their judgment and shows. I want to watch that shit. I generally don't find the algorithm does anything for me. Although for my sister and my mom, who are like obsessed with K-dramas, for like now, and my whole Netflix now is just like they use my profile. And so it only recommends me.
Right. Like, all right, we're going to give you an opportunity to take that again. We don't want Netflix to hear about that you guys are sharing a password. They're going to come for you.
No. We have a family account.
Oh, shit. Someone's rappelling down the outside of his house.
Family account, multiple profiles. They just choose to use my profile each time.
Yeah, okay. No. That is very frustrating.
And now it's just it. Like, Kate, nothing against K-dramas. I've just, you know, I've never watched one. Yeah. I've watched it in passing with them, but now I need curate. Now I have no choice.
K-dramas are Korean dramas, like the Korean soap operas.
Yeah, my wife.
That is my wife's big guilty pleasure on her.
They're popular. They're very popular.
Yeah, they are. We don't have the thing that is like just right in between, you know, like primetime, you know, dramas. Actually, like almost HBO dramas, and then like fucking soap opera, like just the lowest of the low soap operas, and they are just churning that shit out right at that level. It's like 50% of each, and they're crushing it.
Well, I think what also, I'm not on the Apple TV, but I've seen on like the Samsung TVs, they put like the top 10 and it's in different regions or whatever.
I actually
find that to be the most useful, like you know, not their recommendations, like just tell me what the top 10 is. I'll probably watch something within that. What are the most popular shows that everybody else is watching, which is kind of curated to some degree? Like, okay, like I'll watch that. You know, I'll take a look at it. I don't know why that doesn't pop up more recently.
I mean, they know about the idea of like the curation. Xbox Game Pass is apparently very good at this. Like, gamers say that they have like a curated selection of games and they're like pulling hidden gems out that people really value. Like, people are like, oh shit, like you guys are really nailing this.
So yeah, it makes it easy to interact with new stuff when it's put in front of you in like limited quantities, not like here's 700 free games this month. It's like here are the fucking five we think are good.
Yeah.
And I think, like, even to what you're saying, Mesh, and like even Jack, like we all kind of say the same thing, and I'm probably same for you, Paul. Is like, you kind of need like these three or four friends to tell you to watch something.
Yeah, exactly.
And then that you hit the tipping point, you're like, okay, now I'll do it, because we're already in an environment where it's like, there's already few shows I don't need prompting or encouragement to go see. Like, seldom is like, oh, when that's out, I'm watching it. And if it is, it's usually trash reality TV.
Yeah.
But other than that, like, good stuff, I need like Anna, I need Jack, I need my other, a couple other friends or people to suggest something. And then I'm like, oh, okay, that's the, we've reached the suggestion tipping point.
I think, you know, I think Euphoria was a good example of this, where I know Euphoria, most people start, that I knew started watching it in season two and started telling people about it. And I started paying attention to it on TikTok because it was like all these scenes that would pop up on TikTok. I had no idea what the show was. It just looked kind of like, you know, dark and fucked up. And then you would hear the soundtrack with like Labyrinth constantly. And then over this period of time, like season two comes out, boom, everyone I know is watching it. It's just like, it's like the word of mouth phenomenon, especially with social. And I think Euphoria was like, now what? It's like one of the biggest shows in the U.S. or I don't know about the world, but it's definitely one of the biggest shows in the U.S.
That was another strategically questionable decision Netflix made, where they like turned off the ability to screen cap it. And it was like they were like, all right, you know what our issue is? I know people are concerned about the subscriber numbers, but I think our problem is that we're too cool. And we're like, we need to be just like way less cool and let fewer people share passwords, fewer memes about our content. So if you try and screen cap it, it'll just be a black screen. And yeah, just that's drill down on meeting. Those things.
They're like, we're getting killed by shit posts.
And well, everybody loves ads, though. That's the thing you have to understand.
I'd pay more for ads.
As we are like hitting this like peak content world, I just feel like there's, I am so reliant on recommendations, like Miles was saying, and there's, we're split between so many different things. I feel like it's going to be harder and harder to like generate those. Like, I guess Severance was the last one that like really seemed to, I think my threshold's like 5-6 people recommending it.
I think there's need for more. I think there's a supply issue here. Like, I think we just want more good shit. It takes us a while to get into it. Once we're into it, it's like, I keep hearing about Slow Horses. One more person tells me about Slow Horses, I'm going to watch it. You know, one more person tells me about Severance, I will watch it. Those are two shows I haven't seen yet, but now more and more people recommend it.
Is Slow Horses the very first thing committed to film where the guy's riding a horse? And to settle a bet on whether his feet leave the ground at the same time.
Even when you said that, I'm like, Slow Horses? I'm
is
like,
it called? Maybe I guess maybe I get the name wrong.
No, it is Slow Horses.
It's some detective show.
Spy
it's
fiction. Slow Horses. Yeah. I mean, this is a real show. But again, I'm like, I'm so overwhelmed by the amount of things. That's why I'm like, I guess, if like what you're saying is there isn't a demand issue, there's a supply issue. I'm like, I don't know, maybe because I don't have the same like blocks of space to like consistently consume many shows. Or I don't know.
I think it's like that one show. It's not like multiple shows. It's like, what is the show you want to spend your time on now? Okay, it hasn't hit me yet. I'm just going to wait for the next one.
Mm-hmm. So I saw a headline about Slow Horses. And then I just heard you mention it. Now it's just going to take 9 more people to mention it to you. But I am at the point, and this is how I know content fatigue is real for me, that when you just said that, I got a little bit mad at you. I was like, come the fuck on, Slow Horses.
Yeah, me too. I was like, the fuck? There's another show?
It's got a great cast. It's got a great cast.
Yeah, no, like, yeah, that, of course.
We should do a group viewing together and make a judgment.
Yeah. I don't know what you guys think. There's also like, you know, people can do social events again where they couldn't really do that for a year and a half. Like there's concerts and you can go to live sporting events. And I've been doing a lot more of that past couple months. So that also adds to it. Like March, April, June, whatever.
It's all coming at the same time.
All you could do is stream, right? And now you can do more stuff.
The movies that are coming out are great. Like the Top Gun movie's coming out. I don't know, for some reason the fact that the Top Gun movie's finally coming out, I'm like, whoa, movies are back, baby. And it's all advertised all over the NBA, so that might be part of
that trailer. That trailer was like originally pre-COVID, I think, that it came out. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
All right, let's take a quick break. We'll come back and talk about the Multiverse of Madness. Ooh.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan. And if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island. And secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Me. Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this. I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter. That's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered. For just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black. Directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R. Under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
And we're back. Did you guys see Doctor Strange 2? Is that, do we have that number right?
It is 2.
That's the right number, yeah.
Yeah. I went and saw it. Paul, did you see it yet?
I have not seen it yet.
And Paul, you used to
definitely see it.
You used to, I know you're a lawyer at Marvel. What was sort of, what kind of things are you doing over there?
I was doing a lot of different things. I was doing business affairs, so actor, writer, director deals for the films and television shows. I was doing all the production legal on the film. So like basically from pre-production, production, post-production, all those different agreements, like location agreements, equipment, VFX, everything, like anything you can think of, travel, even booking the private jets for the talent that didn't want to fly first class or whatever. So there's like a separate group at Disney that did that. I did corporate stuff, real estate, random stuff, merchandise license, thousands of license agreements for, you know, putting Spider-Man on backpacks and t-shirts and stuff like that. So really, I was there for almost 6 years. I did a ton of different things.
Wow. So you were there at its heaviest period.
Yeah, I was there from, if you want to, Iron Man 2 coming out, being released, to Cap Civil War going into pre-production.
Oh,
so basically,
wow.
Like
that's great.
So what this movie is significant from a like licensing perspective, right? Because isn't there like X-Men crossovers happening in this one?
Yeah, so this is the first. So Kevin Feige, for those that don't know, is the kind of the creative head of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And he actually got his start working on Superman and I think X-Men films, which were licensed out. So for a long time, the film rights to the X-Men characters, who are Marvel comic characters, were controlled by Fox. And Disney bought Fox a couple years ago. So now Disney, who owns Marvel, and Fox are under the same corporate umbrella. So now the Marvel creative team can use the X-Men. And Doctor Strange 2 is the first movie where they're able to sort of freely incorporate them.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, Mesh, what are your thoughts? How'd they do?
Look, from a fan perspective, I thought it was a fun movie.
There you go.
I thought it was a blast. I went in there, didn't have much expectation. I tried not to watch many of the trailers because I didn't want spoilers. Because honestly, man, these trailers now, I get it. You're trying to get people in theaters, but they just give you all the surprises and it ruins the whole fucking movie.
Yeah. I knew because I heard Patrick Stewart's voice in a trailer and I was like, what?
Yeah. And it's like, and then, you know, and like, I won't say any other spoilers, but, you know, especially with like fandom now, like people are like leaking stuff and it's like, just go and enjoy the movie. Have some fun. This is the first time we went to, normally we go to an IMAX in Midtown, but we went to our local, my buddy and I went to our local Williamsburg cinema, which was a lot of fun because people were like yelling at the screen and it was clapping. Honestly, fun movie. I thought the interesting thing about the movie, besides, you know, some interesting character developments, was that it really shows Disney, and Paul and I talked about this recently on our show, where we talked about the master planning of Disney Plus and how if you haven't watched WandaVision or What If going into the movie, you're watching it after because you need context. One way or the other, you need to watch the Disney Plus context, the content that gives you context for the movies. And it's, I mean, to design it in a way like that, just from a business perspective and a content perspective, I just think it's pretty cool.
Right. It makes sense that it's truly all many people consume is like, I can get all of my like Marvel jollies pretty much year round.
But the flip side of that though is like, and this is my wife's issue, is like, I can't watch 15 hours worth of stuff to go see a movie with you and understand it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I only really watch the movies occasionally and I feel like I can like pick up on what's happening most of the time. And that's not necessarily like I can kind of intuit it, but
yeah, I think that's by design too, though. I think it's like they just give you enough where they still want like a new person to come in and be able to watch it. But to Paul's point, I mean, it is a lot. You have to just kind of watch it. Like I watch it when it comes out, so I'm not catching up right before the movie. I'm like, hey, Paul, have you watched like 30 hours of these shows so that we can go to the movie? You have to go to the YouTube.
No, because I'm the lawyer.
Yeah, he's got. In the morning, he's still doing contract negotiations and stuff, and I'm sitting there telling him about how great Moon Knight is.
Yeah. So, all right, so I don't want spoilers. I don't want to ask you like how strange is Doctor or how madness the multiverse is, but so one thing that's happening in the discourse just constantly, like now with everything, is that the. I guess the right is claiming this movie is like this one has a woman who's bad and we are the party of misogyny. I think they're just like openly like that's us now. So yeah, there we go. We're team this movie. Also, Sam Raimi apparently like donated to George W. Bush and may have been a Trump supporter, but we don't know the details of that. But so some of the arguments around this actually like bring up interesting stuff. I don't think it's interesting to be like this movie is wholly bad or wholly good or that it is this movie. It's dangerous. Like it's a movie. It needs to have interesting ideas in it for me to like watch it and then think about it later. And it does seem like there's a trend of the bad guys in Marvel movies having compelling points of view that are like I remember that from the first Avengers when like Loki came through and like, you know, he like ultimately he's about like fascism and authoritarianism, but like he put it in a way that I was like, that was like, I don't know, are they trying to get people on board with with what he's saying? Like he's, they did a good job writing him in a way that like I feel like other previous superhero movies might not have done. But now people are pointing out that like Thanos quotes a bunch of like environmentalism, like talking points. Killmonger like is explicitly associated with the like militant American Black Panther Party. And people are like, is Marvel like trying to send an overall message that like, you know, the Avengers are here to like bring things back to a safe status quo? I don't think that means... I think that's an interesting conversation without saying like, so don't see these movies, you know. Miles, did you'd objected to my take that Loki had some interesting things to say?
No, it's I think it's like, you know, partially like writing, right? Old superhero films was always like, here's good guy and here's bad guy. Don't fucking worry about this fool's backstory. He's fucking bad. And don't worry, Superman's gonna beat the shit out of him for you. Mm-hmm. Was like kind of like the energy we took into it. And then over time, like there was this, you know, there's more nuance to writing like characters we think are bad or evil, you know, and giving them a little more depth or texture. And I think part of that does end up being like, how do we make this guy who has like some really problematic ideas about the world more relatable? Because then we're kind of pulling out that this isn't just like a very one-dimensional evil character. But I think on the other side of that coin is someone who is like not really thinking very critically will be like, yep, exactly that part, dude.
And therefore, fuck everybody who believes the environmental talking points or that like eternal growth is unsustainable, I think was one of the things Thanos talked about.
But also think of how many memes from conservatives and far right wing figures involve the MCU. You know, like this is very popular stuff that everyone is watching. And for whatever, I mean, I think it's like when it's just, I mean, I don't know, maybe if it's like a Rorschach test that like any of these people just look at and like, and this is how I can make it a thing to reinforce my world. Yeah. But I don't know. I don't think there's a concerted effort, but who knows? I mean, you know, more sinister things have happened. So,
you know, whether the comparison of social commentary, political allegories, like everybody wants to claim something or get creative with it. I mean, shit, when I was in college, first year of college, we had like writing classes on, you know, how X TV show is compared to like this historical event and you have to write about it and almost come up with creative ways to like compare the two. I'm sure there's some like old school, there's, you know, inspiration to write certain characters. I think the interesting thing that we see now that either people want to claim something politically, but in the case of these characters, I think one, it seems that there's a conscious effort to be like, okay, the world we live in now is to be more inclusive. Two, by the way, there's multiple, like, you know, they introduced this whole concept of variants, like there's different versions of the same person. So the one villain could actually be a good version in a different world. And I don't know if that's actually being pushed to cover all these potential like historic tracks of writing. But yeah, I mean, I think if you anyone could watch these movies and these characters and claim it in however way they would want, would be my opinion on it. You could flip it either way.
Right.
Paul, when you were at Marvel, did you ever have to like do a licensing deal with like Greenpeace to be like, you guys are going to be our bad guys in this next movie?
No, I mean, it's an interesting question. There are relationships you don't want to influence negatively, right? So for example, you know, it's a business at the end of the day. I think people have to realize like, they're not trying to necessarily make a cultural statement. If they can, great. But like the objective is to maximize revenue, maximize merchandise sales. And so, you know, there's a time, and I'm not going to say whether it was Marvel, but there are studios, right, that before they finalize a script, they'll have a pre-screening where executives from Walmart or Target or whoever will come in and watch and say, okay, well, maybe I can fit this many toys in my aisle, right? Or if I like this part of it. And so, you know, there's a commercial element, I think, which drives a lot of this. And I think the Rorschach test that that idea that, you know, people will make of it what they will, right? They'll take cues, because I think the idea is to sort of hit it close to the middle, not really offend anyone, maximize revenue, make a statement if you can, but that's not really the objective. And on the Black Panther side, I mean, I thought I left that movie, rest in peace, Chadwick Boseman, thinking Killmonger was the best character, right? Like not that I necessarily resonated with him, but he was like an awesome guy. And I mean, his politics, his vendetta, his anger were kind of all justified given the background and what he sort of went through growing up. So, you know, I think you could look at it and say that he was glorified in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
I guess it's that's a really good point. And like the reading of this that I disagree with, that's like Marvel is bad because they're the good guys in that are, you know, conservative, is like, well, they're making movies with like interesting ideas in them being played by our most charismatic actors, you know, like Michael B. Jordan. And then, yeah, like the bad guys are like where to put the fun stuff, like Heath Ledger's Joker, Hans Gruber, two of my favorite.
Like, as you root for, kind of, to some.
Yeah, well, I root for them to be on screen more.
And yeah, like, exactly.
You know, they don't have to make sense. Like the fact that they're on screen only to like pop up, say something badass, and then like kill someone makes it a much easier character to write and be awesome and be cool. And like the fact, as long as they're, you know, philosophy sounds badass, like it doesn't need to hold together. Like the fact that the Joker is a agent of chaos and also has the most meticulously planned, like just 40 part schemes, you know, constantly swirling around him. It doesn't make sense, but it doesn't have to, because it's just like how antagonists work in movies. But
man, and the emergence of the anti-hero, right? Like we just generally like those weird characters that are like the Deadpools or your Wolverines, like a Don Draper. Like they're likable, but they're not likable. Bane. We like these characters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He made really high pitched voices. Fucking awesome. Bane. You know? Man, that's so interesting about the movies having to go through like a focus group of executives, because anytime I've been involved with a creative project that needs to be focus grouped by a brand, it's not good for the creative.
Some real bad notes.
Yeah, the notes are usually pretty wild. So I don't know, that explains something.
Paul, wouldn't you say like that is the benefit of Marvel? Is Kevin Feige is a executive, but he's also like the creative vision behind it all. So like he can make both decisions.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and I'm not suggesting that it was Marvel or that there would like a complete rewrite at the, you know, behest of a corporate executive for Walmart. I'm just saying that, you know, on the margins, maybe there's a thumb on the scale. Maybe they're like, oh, if you could fit this, you know, this gun or this toy gun, whatever, would sell really well. Or, oh, let's get another shot of this hammer in here, or a little bit longer, because we're going to make this plush hammer, or that whatever, that Hasbro Thor hammer that was sold out forever. I mean, I'm just saying, like, in the margins, that could be a part of it, but it's not, I don't think it's driving anyone's like creatively. And I also don't think that, you know, if Kevin or the creative exec were like, no, I don't want to focus on this or feature this piece of merchandise, then they wouldn't do it. But ultimately, there's a lot of cooks in the kitchen,
right?
The creative head is going to have final say. But it's and to Miles' point, these stories are a lot more nuanced than they were 20 years ago, because you're making three of them a year or four of them a year, and they're, you know, $200 million budgets. So they can't just be, you know, very plain vanilla anymore.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, because they were so formulaic. And I think that may be the reason why people even began to crave an anti-hero more, is because I felt like the good guy, bad guy binary became so formulaic. They're like, here we go, inciting incident. The bad guy came to town. Now the good guy's got to figure it out. And then in the final battle, he's going to lose real bad in the beginning. And then he's going to pull it out at the end. And I think the ebb and flow of that may have gotten a little bit stale. And I think why even like James Bond, when Daniel Craig started playing James Bond, like they were even like, this guy's kind of fucked up.
Yeah.
You know,
and people were pissed.
Yeah. But I was like, no, I like this. Yeah, as a younger viewer, I was like, this is dope. Because this this is what exactly I don't like to see these people. It's just like, I feel nothing. I do everything the same every day. I kill people. Plenty of women's lives are lost because of my actions, and I'm fine. And
I'm riddled fine. With venereal disease.
Right.
But I have blonde hair now. What the fuck?
Yeah. But that's I mean, crazy. I think so, all of those things kind of come together and begin to sort of shape all those things. And I think to the what you're saying about brands coming in and looking at things, of course, like these are all revenue generating endeavors. And even like we've talked about in the past, Jack, about how the Pentagon can even get involved with things when you
Top
use
gun,
military
baby.
Equipment that like, yeah, sometimes they will have real notes to weigh in because of, you know, there's a relationship there. But I think, yeah, looking at all of those things together, you kind of get a better understanding of like, well, is it so sinister? Or is it more just like, we kind of got to make it sort of nebulous so the most amount of people come and say they like it and continue to like it.
Yeah, I think up until very recently, the Pentagon was still like, Top Gun is still our best recruiting tool. Like has been, continues to be, is, and now they have a sequel coming out. I'm
what
sure.
What war were they fighting?
They weren't. It was just, it was like unnamed bad guy.
Love
this
that.
This is a hot mission. Yeah. Yeah. Well, guys, this has been, it's been really fun having you on, Paul Mesh. Paul, where can people find you, follow you, hear you, all that good stuff?
So Better Call Paul, the podcast is Instagram. And then it's Paul at Say Hi Lola is my email. And the podcast is Better Call Paul. So all anywhere right. you get your podcasts, Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, you name it.
We've never had anyone give their email. Are people just able to hit you up?
We have an email so they can hit Paul specifically.
Yeah, got it. Okay. Damn. Oh, yeah. All I'm right.
Sure you have some curious listeners about your time there.
Mesh, how about you?
Yeah, no, check out the podcast, Better Call Paul. I'm at Mesh Lakhani on Twitter. And always happy to engage with folks and really appreciate you guys having us on. This is a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a fun conversation.
Yeah, you guys are great. Very informed.
And is there a tweet or some of the work of social media you guys have been enjoying?
I actually had a couple here that I took down that I found a good one today. Did not notice. I felt like an idiot when I read this, but someone wrote, I've been on Twitter since 2009. I'm just now realizing the home button is a birdhouse. I laughed out loud because that did not occur to me until today.
Yep.
And then, there's another one of someone said, there will never be another product that inspires me so much, that inspires so much envy in me as the original iPod did back in 2001. Mm. And it was just like a picture of it. And I thought that was actually cool because it was so innovative. And since then, you know, like things have gotten a little boring.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, those are two tweets that I found today that the other one's really about bear markets and stuff, but I won't bore everybody with that shit.
And they just discontinued the iPod, right? That was the... Big news.
Oh, is that what happened?
Yeah.
Oh, today. I didn't even realize that. I didn't even know they sold iPods anymore. So, I just thought it was a cool tweet.
Yeah. Thought it all became an iPod Touch at a certain point.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
They just didn't discontinue the Touch?
Yeah, I think they're discontinuing all. You are not allowed to say the word iPod anymore. I think
Tim, please.
Yeah, now you have to buy a new phone that has a headphone jack for your old headphones that used to not work, and then now we have to buy another adapter for it.
The real troll move is it's going to have the headphone jack from the first iPod that had a remote on the fucking thing. So it was like that, like 3.5 millimeter thing plus like a circular thing to send the data for the remote. That's how they're going to fuck us.
That's it.
But I got mine on deck.
Miles, where can people find you? What's a tweet you've been enjoying?
Man, find me on Twitter and Instagram at Miles of Gray. That's Gray with an A. And also, if you like basketball, check out the basketball show Miles and Jack Got Mad Boosties. It's an NBA podcast, official. You know, they decided to get involved with two rapscallions like us. And also, if you like trash reality, check out my other show, 420 Day Fiance. Some tweets that I like. First one is from AME Choppa at Melek Thomas tweeted, This Buzz Lightyear movie going to be good until you got to do an origin story for Woody and we find out he was a slave overseer at a cotton plantation in Antebellum, Texas. And this one, another one is from at G Kush Baby tweeted, a party, but everyone brings potatoes prepared a different way.
Yeah.
I like that.
That was one of
I
like.
Well, we know that what the difference between the fries between Miles and Paul are going to be.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
be
yeah.
Rare, yeah. And the other is going to be double fried. Or
like, I'll take an old Play-Doh thing, like the old McDonald's Play-Doh thing, put mashed potatoes in it, and just and be like, here are the fries.
You can find me on Twitter at Jack_O'Brien, a tweet I've been enjoying. Paris at Solaris Hilton tweeted me, having remembered girls like it when you ask them questions. What's your problem? And then just got to give it up. Miriam Posner giving it up for footnotes. Reading a book with footnotes instead of end notes. And sorry, haters, it's so much better. It's true.
Yeah.
So from now on, we will be just doing the citations in the episode, right? Right when we read from an article. We'll be reading off the URL.
Yes.
The text of the URL. HTTP. And then what the fell tweeted, I'm a lot of things, but first and foremost, I'm a Taco Bell customer. And, and Skylar Higley tweeted, the Star Spangled Banner sounds like it was made up on the spot. And I... oh, say, can you see? It sounds like... Yeah.
Put on the spot real early in the morning.
Yeah.
By the dawn's early.
You can find us on Twitter at Daily Zeitgeist. We're at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We have a Facebook fan page and a website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post our episodes and our footnotes. Where we link off to the information that we talked about in today's episode, as well as a song that we think you might enjoy. Miles, what song do we think people might enjoy?
Oh, let's go out on one of my favorite producers from Australia, Taku. And this is a track called Make You Wanna. And it's just good, dancey, sample-based beats. You should like them. They're good. And Taku in general. Check if you're not familiar with Taku, really great artist. Can't recommend him enough.
All right. Well, the Daily Zeitgeist is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. That is going to do it for us this morning. We're back this afternoon to tell you what is trending, and we will talk to y'all then. Bye.
Bye.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. A new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. Two 420-foot vertical speedways, three launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Roger that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 Gs in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at CedarPoint.com.